Greetings, everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the science of milk right after this message. You know, Charles Lyell, one of the pillars of modern geology, published his Principles of Geology in the early 1800s. It's Lyell's concepts that are so widely accepted today that most of us, well, that's most people who believe them, don't even know who it was that originated these ideas. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that we have developed this doctrine of origins. And it was devised by simply projecting all of these natural processes back through time indefinitely. Catastrophes like Noah's flood are strictly ruled out. And then we turn around and call this process science. Well, now listen to this. The watershed of the Mississippi River transports a tremendous amount of silt downstream to the Gulf of Mexico. And every year, the delta deposit is enlarging by a known amount. Now, there's no indication that any of this silt has ever been carried very far out to sea. Well, at the present rate, the entire Mississippi River Delta would have accumulated in only 5,000 years. But science acknowledges that the river has been even larger in times past. Ah, but what did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? You know, that's a benchmark in time, 65 million years ago. Now, when we take a look at these factors, like the accumulation of silt in the Mississippi River Delta, which is only 5,000 years old, and then we're told that the dinosaurs were alive 65 million years ago, you know, that delta would have to be thousands of times larger than it is today, if that were true, wouldn't it? And you know, this is just one more of those many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the guise of science, when in reality, it's evolutionary philosophy and religion. Nothing more, nothing less. And this is one more of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School that's conducted twice a year here in Isabella, Missouri. For more information, just call and order my free General Law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, informative, it's entertaining, best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now to order yours, the number 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click on to the email machine and send me an email request for your free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the science of milk. This is from an article published on the website notmilk.com. One of my listeners wrote a letter and said, can you refute these arguments? And we're taking on the science of milk. On page 4, the doctor, in this case, this is Dr. Kradjian. I believe that's the way to pronounce his name. K-R-A-D-J-I-A-N. And he's opposed to milk. He's not opposed to any particular kind of milk. He's just opposed to milk, period. Now, I'm opposed to dirty milk, pasteurized milk, homogenized milk, GMO milk, BST milk, bypassed protein milk, antibiotic milk, irradiated milk, and adulterated milk. But that doesn't mean that milk, per se, is bad for you. Milk is good for you, and it's good for you because God Almighty Himself said it was good for you, gave it to you, told you which animals to take the milk from, gave you a land of milk and honey, and said this is good stuff. We're the people that came along and produced the dirty milk, then boiled it, homogenized it, stuck GMOs in it, BST, bypass protein, and then antibiotics irradiated and adulterated it and put it on the market and kill people with it. But don't blame God for that. He didn't do that. He gave you a good product, told you this is good for you. And the good doctor here says, well, no, none of this milk is good for you, period. Now, I'm going to agree with the doctor that this dirty milk is bad for you, pasteurized milk is bad for you, and all of the problems that are associated with milk that you see here in this article, and indeed in all the articles that I've ever seen, is caused by dirty milk, pasteurized milk, homogenized milk, GMO milk, BST milk, bypass protein milk, antibiotic milk, irradiated milk, and adulterated milk. Those are all bad for you. Whole, raw, clean milk from a cow is good for you. Well, so says God, you know, for whatever that's worth. Now, he has another paragraph in here. He says, can mother's milk increase intelligence? Now, think about this for a minute, you mothers out there. Can mother's breast milk increase the intelligence of your child over Similac or some other formula-type milk, which is sold as an industrial cleaner, well, industrial product? It seems that it can, and in a remarkable study published in Lancet during 1992, volume 339, page 261 through 264, a group of British workers randomly placed premature infants into two groups. One group received a proper formula. The other group received human breast milk. I'm going to underline the word proper formula. What is a proper formula? Well, anything that the FDA, the Department of Agriculture, the government labels as good or passes, isn't it? I want to point out that it's been discovered that a woman, this is a female human being's breast milk, contains over 92 elements. The best that can be said for Similac is that it has 12. Evidently, the other 80 aren't necessary. But, watch this. When you feed this proper formula to a group of babies, and then you take an equal number and another group of babies, and you feed them mother's breast milk, the other group received human breast milk. Both fluids were given by stomach tube. These children were allowed and followed up for over 10 years. In intelligence testing, the human milk children averaged 10 IQ points higher. Well, why not? Why wouldn't the correct building blocks for the rapidly maturing and growing brain have a positive effect? Now let's take a look at the next paragraph. He says, the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, 1982, Ralph Holman described an infant who developed profound neurological disease while being nourished by intravenous fluids only. The fluids used contained only linoleic acid, just one of the essential fatty acids. When the other alpha-linoleic acid was added to the intravenous fluids, the neurological disorders cleared up. All right. Well, I've reported on that many times, and that's very, very true. For instance, if you have a symptom, we call it disease, you have a disease symptom, it's either caused by poison, toxicity, or it's caused by starvation, deficiency. You're not getting enough of the nutrients that you need. So when somebody develops a vitamin C deficiency or a vitamin D deficiency, we hang a label on that deficiency, don't we? In other words, we say this guy's got scurvy. Well, I don't care whether you call it scurvy or you call it heavenly delight or you call it moonstruck, or you could hang any label on there you want. You know, if you got a symptom, you don't feel good, you're diseased, you're ill at ease, you give this guy vitamin C, the disease, the ill at ease, the pain, the suffering, the anguish goes away. Isn't that called a cure? All right, now, if you deprive these babies of essential nutrients, which you do with Similac and these formulas, then they have to develop without these nutrients, and their IQs turn out to be, on average, 10 points lower. And if you feed them breast milk, then their average IQ is 10 points higher. Okay. Makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it? and I agree with the doctor here, that human babies should be nursed, not fed a formula, and they certainly shouldn't be given puppy milk, cat milk, cow's milk, or any other kind of milk in lieu of mother's breast milk. But does that mean that when this baby gets to be a year old, that he should never drink any milk at all forever from that point on? That's the conclusion that these people arrive at, and I dissent from that conclusion. And that's because there's a higher authority says, hey, listen, I designed the human body, and I designed it for cow's milk, sheep's milk, goat's milk, human milk, and kine milk. And it's good for you, and you ought to take advantage of it. Now, if you don't drink milk, that does not mean you're going to die. You can get all the nutrients that are in milk from some other source. You can get calcium from bell peppers, for crying out loud. In fact, there's more calcium contained in lamb's quarter, which is a common weed, than there is in spinach or milk, probably both combined. So I'm not here to advance to you that you have to drink milk, and if you don't drink milk, you're going to hellfire and brimstone forever and ever, and that's the final word. You're not going to hell. Nothing's going to happen to you if you don't drink milk. My point is this. Just because somebody comes along and tells you you ought not to drink milk, and they claim that we're the agents of science over here, that's not true. And remember, last time I told you, here at the bottom of page 2, our good doctor, Kradjian, says, our Paleolithic ancestors are another crucial and interesting group to study. Here we're limited to speculation and indirect evidence. There's no science in speculation and indirect evidence, boys and girls. Furthermore, when you read this paragraph, there is no evidence here that Paleolithic man drank milk or did not drink milk. We don't know. We don't have any witnesses, evidence, or testimony. There isn't any way to tell whether Neanderthal or Paleolithic man drank cow's milk, puppy milk, cat's milk, or any other kind of milk. We don't know. So let's stick with what we do know, shall we? I mean, isn't that the scientific methodology? Now, in the same journal, 5 years later, a guy by the name of Berve, B-J-E-R-V-E, Mustad, and Thorsen, working in Norway, found exactly the same problem in adult patients on long-term gastric tube feeding. In 1930, Dr. G.O. Burr, in Minnesota, working with rats, found that linoleic acid deficiencies created a deficiency syndrome. Why is this mentioned? Well, in the early 1960s, pediatricians found skin lesions in children fed formulas without the same linoleic acid. Remembering the research, the addition of the acid to the formula cured the problem. Essential fatty acids are just that, and cow's milk is markedly deficient in these when compared to human milk. Well, gosh, I couldn't agree more. So for the first year of a baby's life, you should not be feeding cow's milk in place of human breast milk. But you know, human mothers go dry. And my wife would dry up after about 6 months. Well, now something has to take the place of this human breast milk after 6 months, or the kid's going to starve to death, isn't he? So what's the next best thing to give them? All right, goat's milk. I raised a bunch of kids, so I went out and I raised them on goat's milk. Now, goat's milk is a little closer to human milk than is cow's milk, sheep's milk, and so on. So when God gave us sheep's milk, goat's milk, cow's milk, kine's milk, He gave us a substitute. He gave us a good food, but it doesn't substitute for the human breast milk in the first 6 months to a year. Furthermore, in the olden days, women used to breastfeed their children up to 2 years of age. In fact, Isaac was weaned at age 2, and 2 or 3 examples in the Bible occur where these women were weaning their babies at age 2. Okay, so you can sit there and say, oh my God, that's all wrong and that's backward and we're not going to do that. I'm not telling you when to breastfeed your children or when to wean them, ladies. I'll let you figure that out for yourselves. Hey, hang on. We've got to take a break. We'll be right back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Well, Charles Lyell, one of the pillars of modern geology, published his Principles of Geology in the early 1800s. Now, remember, it's Lyell's concepts that are so widely accepted that most people who believe in Lyell's uniformitarian theology don't even know who it was that originated it. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was devised by simply projecting all of these natural processes that we observe today through time indefinitely. That way, catastrophes like the flood are strictly ruled out. And remember, we call this science. So let's take a look at topsoil. Listen to this. One writer observed that the soil which sustains life lies in a thin layer of an average depth of 7 or 8 inches over the face of the entire earth. Now, the earth beneath this thin layer of topsoil is dead and sterile as the moon. And that thin film is all that stands between man and extinction. So how long does it take for topsoil to accumulate? All right. Well, scientists estimate that the combination of plant growth, bacterial decay, and erosion produces 6 inches of topsoil in 5,000 years, or about 1 inch per 1,000 years. Now, that would total 6,500 feet of topsoil in 65 million years. Did you get that? Now, what did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? It wasn't that about 65 million years ago? Now, boys and girls, let's just do the arithmetic. If it takes 1,000 years to build an inch of topsoil, and we've got 6 to 8 inches of it on the earth today, doesn't that tell you that's about 5, 6, 7, 8 thousand years? And if it's building up at an inch every 1,000 years, and we added that up for 65 million years, wouldn't that be 6,500 feet of topsoil in 65 million years? Now remember, they told us these dinosaurs died 65 million years ago, and if that's true, then just looking at the natural processes that we see going on right now today and just moving them back 65 million years, we need 6,500 feet of topsoil, and it just ain't there, is it? You know, this is just one more of those many lessons in my Mosaic Law School, conducted twice a year here in Isabella, Missouri. For more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now to order yours. It's 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto my email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're taking a look here at the science of milk, just applying a little reason, logic, and common sense, a little editorial opinion as we progress along. I've laid out my position. My position comes from the Scripture. I think the Scripture is true, accurate, and correct, and I think that God Almighty knows more about milk and the science of milk than does Dr. Cradjian or the 2,700 other authors who wrote the 2,700 pieces that went into, what did he call that now? It was something here to do with milk. He said he looked at 2,700 of these, didn't he? Let me see if I can find that quotation for you here. It was on page 1 or 2. Yeah, he said here, page 2, he said, let's look at the scientific literature first. From 1988 to 93, there were 2,700 articles dealing with milk recorded in the medicine archives. Medicine archives. And by the time you get through reading all of this literature over here, boys and girls, you're going to have about 2,700 different opinions, but all of these opinions come down to one thing. Milk's no good for you. And they don't come along and tell you, well, there is some milk that's good for you, and most of it's bad. Now, if you never drank another drop of milk for the rest of your life, you won't be harming yourself. You'll actually be doing yourself a favor, because for the rest of this article, he lays out all of the dirt in the milk industry. And I mean, it is dirty. In fact, I agree with the doctor. This milk industry, this stuff that you buy out of the supermarket today, is so dirty, so filthy, and it is so detrimental to your health. And since I know how detrimental it is to my health, when I drink a cup of coffee, I won't even put one of those little creamers in my coffee. That's how dirty I think that crap is. And I'm a dairyman. Now, I drink about a half a gallon of milk a day. That would be 2 quarts. And I have been drinking about, I'd say, 2 quarts of milk a day every day, you know, except when I'm away from home and I can't get it. But every day that I'm at home, and I have been for the last 21 or 2 years here on the farm. I'm 65 years old. I have no symptoms, none, zero. And I want to point this out to you, because in the year 2000, it was reported that 99% of Americans have symptoms. 99% of Americans have allergies. They wear glasses. They have hearing aids, or they're obese, or there's something wrong with them. They've got diabetes, you know, or they've got Crohn's disease or whatever. Only 1% of Americans drawing breath today is symptom-free. Now, in 1918, there was a similar study done by the Department of Defense, and it was called the War Department in those days. And they took all of the men, you know, that were coming into the Army, and they determined 60% of Americans in 1918 were symptom-free. That was bad news, because that said 60% of Americans are sick in 1918. Today, 99% of us are sick. Only 1% of us are well. But in 1918, 60% of the American population was well. 40% were sick. Well, that's pretty striking. In 1900, only one person in 33 would come down with cancer. Today, it's 1 in 2. That's pretty striking, wouldn't you say? Now, if you take a look at health and the health statistics here in America, Americans are getting sicker and sicker, not better and better. We have a good health care system, and Dr. Kradjian here is part and parcel with it, and he's what did he call himself here? He's got his title here on the front. He is he works with breast surgery, chief division of general surgery, Seton Medical Center. So he looks like he's a breast surgeon, cuts off ladies' breasts. I think you ladies would be better off to cure the cancer and keep your breasts, but you know, here again, I don't want to get in the way of people's medical practices. If you want to cut your breasts off, I think that's fine. I'm not opposed to you ladies having your breasts cut off, if that's what you want to do. I'll tell you what bugs me, is that when these protocols are established, they try to enforce these protocols on all of us, whether we want them or not. For instance, you take milk in the United States, with the exception of California, where you can buy raw certified milk in certain locations. In my state, you cannot go into a store and buy raw certified milk. They don't allow it in this state. In this state, you must buy dirty milk, pasteurized milk, homogenized milk, GMO milk, BST milk, bypass protein milk, antibiotic milk, irradiated milk, or adulterated milk. You cannot buy, by law, in this state, out of a store, raw certified whole milk. It's illegal. So what my government here in Missouri says to me, George Gordon, you can have your choice, Mr. Gordon. You can buy any of the milk that we approve, but you can't have the milk that you want. I don't think that's choice. I think that's indoctrination. So I'd like to spend my time educating you and then giving you the opportunity to choose. You know, there's another choice out there. God in the scripture said there's another kind of milk out there for you. It's called clean, whole, raw cow's milk. I want to emphasize the word clean because, you see, back in 1900, we didn't have clean milk. We had whole, raw, dirty milk, which caused disease. Typhoid fever, cholera, TB. And so the public officials or the public health officials said, we got to do something about this whole, dirty, raw milk. Well, they had two choices. We can clean up the milk supply so that we can sell clean, whole, raw milk, or we can pasteurize it and we can continue producing dirty, whole, pasteurized milk. And the decision was is that we're going to continue producing dirty, whole, pasteurized milk. And that's what you have today. I'd like to have a choice. I'd like to have clean, whole, raw milk in place of dirty, whole, pasteurized milk. Now, can I make my position any clearer? Now, the doctor goes on to say, well, at least cow's milk is pure. Or is it? You know, 50 years ago, an average cow produced 2,000 pounds of milk per year. Today, the top producers give 50,000 pounds. Now, how was this accomplished? Well, drugs, antibiotics, hormones, forced feeding plans, and specialized breeding. That's how. And boy, did the doctor hit the nail on the head there. All right, now, let me tell you what I do. I've got Jersey cows here. And I don't force feed them. I don't give them any drugs. I don't give them any antibiotics, no hormones. And I don't participate in any specialized breeding. Now, my cows do not give 50,000 pounds of milk, but they do give a little more than 2,000. See, milk weighs 8.7 pounds. Now, my cows will give about 1,000 gallons a year. Well, 1,000 gallons times 8.7 will give us approximately 8,700 pounds of milk a year. I don't know where the doctor got his 2,000 pounds. But he goes on to say the latest high-tech onslaught on the poor cow is bovine growth hormone, or BGH. This genetically engineered drug is supposed to stimulate milk production, but according to Monsanto, the hormone's manufacturer, does not affect the milk or the meat. There are three other manufacturers, up John, Eli Lilly, and American Cinnamid. Obviously, there have been no long-term studies on the hormone's effects on the human drinking on humans drinking this milk. Other countries have banned BGH because of safety concerns, and one of the problems with adding molecules to a milk cow's body is that the molecules usually come out in the milk. Now, I don't know how you feel, but I don't want to experiment with the ingestion of a growth hormone. A related problem is that it causes a marked increase, 50 to 70%, in mastitis. That's true. And this then requires antibiotic therapy. That's true. And the residues of the antibiotics appear in the milk, and it seems that the public is uneasy about this product. In one survey, 43% felt that growth hormone-treated milk represented a health risk. I believe that. A vice president for public policy at Monsanto was opposed to labeling for that reason, because 43% of you people, if you saw that your milk was labeled BST or BHG, you wouldn't buy it. Listen, all of the milk in the country is contaminated. Let me explain to you why. It's very simple. You get 10 farmers out here, and the creamery sends a bulk truck out, and my tank, which is 100% clean milk, goes into the truck tank. He goes down to the next farmer who uses antibiotics and these other additives, and he puts that in the tank. What does that do to my milk? My clean milk is now adulterated with my neighbor's milk. And because the labeling would increase or create an artificial distinction, and Monsanto doesn't want that. They do not want you to know what's in your milk. Let me tell you. I'm going to finish. This is the science of milk. I'm going to continue to tell you what's in that milk in your grocery store. And if you want to drink it when I get through, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. The country is awash with milk as it is, and we produce more milk than we can consume. So let's not create any more of this worthless, useless, dirty, adulterated milk, so that we can pile it up and pay taxes to store it. I couldn't agree with you more, Doc. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know Charles Lyell? You know, one of the pillars of our modern geology, and He published his principles of geology back in the early 1800s, and his concepts are so widely accepted that most of us, that is most people, I don't believe them, but most people that believe them don't even know who originated them. So I'm telling you, it's Charles Lyell, and from its inception, his system of reasoning, this is a doctrine of origins, that's religion, by the way, origins is religion, was devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely, so that we can eliminate catastrophes like Noah's flood. Those are strictly ruled out. We call this process science. Well, listen to this. Stalactite growth in caves. Every time you go into a cave, there'll be some guide there that tells you about billions and billions of years ago. Now, if you've toured in a limestone cave, you're likely told that the formation of dripping stone developed very slowly over a period of more than 100,000 years. What is the evidence for this? None. Because under the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., stalactites had grown to 5 feet in less than 50 years. Do you get that? Stalactites under the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., 5 feet in 50 years. So when they're telling you about these stalactites growing, you know, from, you know, thousands and thousands of years, did you ever ask one of them, who was here keeping track and making the record? Have you got any eyewitness testimony? You know, we just believe in parrots, what we've been told. And what did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? We just parrot back 65 million years ago. Now, you know, boys and girls, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to just do the arithmetic on this kind of pseudo-scientific lie. And that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades as science. By the way, those caves that you're walking through were developed during Noah's flood when the great fountains of the deep broke up, and those are the channels where the subterranean water came to the surface and cavitated and washed them out. That's what you're looking at. Well, anyway, this is one of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School, and I conduct that twice a year here in Isabella, Missouri. Now, you can get this Mosaic Law School on compact disc. If you don't want to come to school here, just call us and ask for the Mosaic Law School. Tell us you want to get it on compact disc. It's pretty comprehensive. It's big. It's 3 500-page, 8.5 by 11 volumes, printed on both sides. That's right. And about 60 hours of commentary on compact disc to describe for you the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence that I'm presenting. I don't present suppositions, guesses, hypotheses, and theories, and we guess that, and it might well be. We just give you the facts. And we do that so we can blow you out of the water. It's a 4-hour commentary, remember, on our CD package. Now, if you'll ask for the CD package first, which is free of charge. Remember, the Mosaic Law isn't free, but the CD package is. The place to start, get the CD package, and let me tell you more about it in greater detail. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967, and if you're online, just go to the webpage, georgegordon.org, click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package, or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, as you can imagine, any lactating mammal excretes toxins through her milk. So when cows drink, or when cows are eating pasture where strontium 90 has fallen on it, the strontium 90 goes through the cow and comes out in her milk. We've known that for 40 or 50 years. This includes antibiotics, pesticides, chemicals, and hormones. And also, all cow's milk contains blood. The inspectors are simply asked to keep it under certain limits. Now, you may be horrified to learn that the USDA allows milk to contain from 1 to 1.5 million white blood cells per milliliter. Now, that's only 1/30th of an ounce. Now, if you don't already know this, I'm sorry to tell you that another way to describe white cells where they don't belong would be to call them pus, P-U-S, cells, pus, P-U-S. But don't worry about it. We only allow 1/30th of an ounce per, what's 1 milliliter. to get to the point, is milk pure or is it a chemical, biological, and bacterial cocktail? And finally, will the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, protect you? The United States General Accounting Office, the GAO, tells us that the FDA and the individual states are failing to protect the public from drug residues in milk. Authorities test for only 4 of the 82 drugs in dairy cows. 82 drugs are commonly used to treat dairy cows, and only 4 of them are tested for. Now, I don't think that milk is fit to drink if it's got one of those drugs in it. And I'm a dairyman. I wouldn't drink that crap. And furthermore, I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. Those of us who produce milk for human consumption, and I was in the business for many, many years. I'm not now. I don't produce this milk from my cows. I don't produce milk now for the commercial milk market. I just sell milk privately. If you want clean milk, you've got to go find some guy that's got clean cows. And boy, that's going to be a trip all by itself. There are not very many clean cows in America, and that includes the cows that they're not pasteurizing the milk from. They're feeding them bypass protein. And if these cows have been eating bypass protein, then they're at risk for having mad cow disease. I won't even eat the deer around my local area because the beef farmers around me, the cattle ranchers, feed bypass protein out in their pastures for their beef cows. I don't touch the stuff, but unfortunately, boys and girls, that's the way the FDA and the Department of Agriculture and your government is protecting your health. This doctor here, he's not lying to you. So when he says milk is bad, I think he goes too far when he says all milk is bad for you. There is a little bit of milk out there that is still good for you. The milk that God created in a cow, clean, wholesome, raw milk, that's still good for you. Finding clean, whole, wholesome, raw milk is a trick. It isn't impossible. There's a lot of little guys out there like me that have clean, whole milk. But you got to go find it. And probably one of the best ways for you to find it would be to go to Acres USA. I don't have the Acres. Yeah, I do too. I got it right here. Hang on, I'm going to give you an address. Acres USA is the newspaper or the newsletter magazine that those of us that are in ecological agriculture subscribe to. So all of the organic farmers in America subscribe to this paper, and I submit that every one of you organic consumers out there should subscribe to it all also, so that you can find out where to go to find these organic foods. You want organic whole raw milk? Well, why don't you call Acres USA at 1-800-355-5313. And ask them to give you some people in your local area that subscribe to Acres USA. For instance, let's suppose you live in Dallas, Texas. And you want to find whole, clean, raw milk. You're not going to find it at Kroger's or Piggly Wiggly. You're going to find it from some little producer, some guy that's got 3 or 4 cows. Or there could actually be some guy down there that's actually got a herd of cows and produces clean milk, and then his clean milk is put in with the bulk tank, and then it's just made dirty like everybody else's. And these people here at Acres USA would probably be about the best source that you can get to find out who those producers are in your local area, Dallas, Texas, New Orleans, or wherever you happen to be. That number, again, if you want to subscribe, and I recommend that you subscribe because there's just dozens of articles in every monthly issue of Acres USA. 1-800-355-5313. Once more, that's 1-800-355-5313. All right, other perhaps less biased observers have found the following. 38% of milk samples in 10 cities were contaminated with sulfa drugs or other antibiotics. And this comes from the Center for Science and the Public Interest in the Wall Street Journal, December 29, 1989. A similar study in Washington, D.C. found a 20% contamination rate, Nutrition Action New Health Letter, April 1990. And as you can imagine, the Milk Industry Foundation spokesman claims it's perfectly safe. Jerome Kozak says, I still think that milk is the safest product that we have. Here again, I disagree and I dissent. I think that milk in the United States of America isn't fit for a dog. I wouldn't feed that crap to my dog, much less to my kids. Remember, I'm an old-timey dairyman, and I've said it before, I'll say it again. I never met a dairyman in my 50 years in the cattle business that would drink the milk out of his own bulk tank. Now, we drank milk down on the ranch. Every dairyman drinks milk. Well, I shouldn't say everyone does. Old John Michael, I know, didn't. He said, that crap is so bad I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. He wouldn't even drink milk out of a clean cow, much less out of a dirty one. He produced tons and tons of dirty milk and did it every day and sent it off to the creamery. We always brought a clean cow in and milked her separately for the house. You know, you got to keep a clean cow or two. One that isn't polluted. So what's going on here? Well, when the FDA tested milk, they found few problems. However, they used very lax standards. When they used the same criteria, the FDA data showed 51% of the milk samples showed drug traces. So more than half of the samples shows traces of drugs. Let's focus in on this because it's critical to our understanding of the apparent discrepancies. The FDA uses a DISC assay method that can detect only two of the 30 or so drugs found in milk. And also, the test detects only at the relatively high level. A more powerful test called the CHARM-2 test can detect drugs down to 5 parts per billion. 5 parts per billion. All right, so the FDA does this. Look, our job is to find drugs in the milk, but we don't want to find drugs, and so we come up with a test that's approved by guess who? The FDA and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So we decide what the standards are for our test, and we go out and test this milk. We do the same thing for beef. You know, we're not going to find very many, if any, mad cows in the United States, in spite of the fact that 100,000 cows a year die. They're called downer cows. We call it downer cow syndrome. I suspect that they're dying from mad cow disease. If you did the same test that you did on them over in Great Britain, you'd call it mad cow disease. But we don't want to do that because we got this multi-billion-dollar beef industry in the United States. So we're going to make sure we don't find it. And that's another factor. You don't see me eating beef out here in the restaurant. I eat beef, boys and girls, but I eat the beef that comes off my own farm. I eat meat that I know is clean. Now, there's a lot of meat that's being produced. I was just out to Nevada, and all those ranchers out there that I ran across were producing clean, wholesome beef. And then they take it and they sell it to the sale barn. The sale barn then takes it and sells it to the feedlot. The feedlot feeds them with all these chemicals and additives and so on, craps them up, and then sells them to McDonald's, and then they sell it to you. And I want to point out that Alzheimer's disease, a disease that we didn't even hear about, never knew a word, never heard the word Alzheimer when I was a kid, came about 1979. And that Alzheimer's disease, when they do a post-mortem autopsy, they find that 13% of them, this is a Yale study now, just in the last couple, 3 years, a Yale study shows 13% of them have Jacobs Crutchfield disease. 13% of Alzheimer's, in reality, is Jacobs Crutchfield. That's mad cow disease, spongiform encephalopathy. We don't have that in the United States. We can't find a mad cow in the United States, but we got 3 million people with Alzheimer's disease, and 13% of them have Jacobs Crutchfield disease, which is derived from mad cows. Now, you boys and girls ought to be smart enough to figure that out. Now, can't you? Now, who in hell's working for you? Well, it sure as hell ain't the FDA or the USDA, now is it? Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. All right, here's our Charles Lyle fella again. Listen to this. Charles Lyle, one of the modern Pillars of Modern Geology, published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Have you ever heard that story before? And remember, his concepts are so widely accepted that most of us who believe them don't even know who it was that originated them, but we learned them in college and high school, didn't we? Well, it's from this guy Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was designed by simply projecting all of these natural processes back through time indefinitely, so that catastrophes like Noah's flood are strictly ruled out. Remember, we call this science. Now listen to this. Coral reefs. The buildup of calcium carbonate remains of marine creatures in the warm oceans of our world could be accounted for entirely in a few thousand years since the worldwide flood. That's right. All of the coral reefs, when we take a look at and we measure the time that it takes to build these coral reefs up, and we're measuring those buildup of coral reefs right now, then we go out and measure them. Well, the buildup of the calcium carbonate remains of marine creatures in the warm oceans of our world, can be accounted for entirely in the few thousand years since the worldwide flood. That's 4,000 to 5,000 years ago. Now, what did our teachers tell us about the dinosaurs' extinction? Remember, 65 million years ago? All right, so all you got to do is take a look at the buildup of coral reefs today and then extrapolate that number backward 65 million years, and the oceans would be 100% coral reef. You know, I always tell my students, just do the arithmetic. Listen to what these guys are telling you, and then just get your pen and paper out, get your Texas Instruments calculator out, and do the arithmetic. The oceans are not 100% coral reef. And all of the coral reefs, and there's lots of them in the world, and lots of square miles of it. And when you take a look at it, date back to just 4,000 to 5,000 years, no more. And that's just one more of the many examples of this evolutionary propaganda that masquerades as science. This crap is called science. It's nothing more than religion. It's Wizard of Oz fairy tale land. And this is just one more of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School conducted twice a year here in Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967, and if you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, click on to the email, and send me an email request for that free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. For this article that we're critiquing, you go to notmilk.com. It's an easy one, notmilk.com. And the guy that wrote this one is called Dr. Kradjian, Kradjian. I just took issue with the narrow issue that this guy says all milk is bad. And I say that's not true. All milk is not bad for you. Just most milk is bad for you. Cat milk, dog milk, dirty milk, pasteurized milk, homogenized milk, GMO milk, BST milk, BHG milk, bypass protein milk, antibiotic milk, irradiated milk, adulterated milk. Those are all bad for you. There's one narrow band, not very much, but one narrow band. It's called clean, whole, raw milk. Now that's good for you. And it's good for you if it comes from a cow, goat, sheep, or kine. K-I-N-E. A kine is an animal that has cloven hooves and chews its cud, like a giraffe, a cow, a goat, a sheep. Those are called clean animals. God told us what kind of animals to eat, the kind of animal that you can eat and digest. Now, that does not mean that all beef is good for you, because as soon as you take this beef and you make it dirty beef, you know, or GMO beef or BST beef or bypass protein beef and antibiotic beef and irradiated beef and adulterated beef is not good for you. That's my conclusion. Now, the FDA says that's poppycock and nonsense, that stuff is good for you. You ought to eat more of it and support your local beef industry. Well, listen, you're not supporting the local beef rancher. The guy that's growing this stuff out on the range of Nevada and Wyoming, he's producing a pretty clean product. It's when it goes to the sale barn and it's bought by the multinational corporations, you know, like Tyson, Swift, Armour, and those meatpacking giants, and ADM and Cargill and, you know, these multinational corporations, and they put them on these big feedlots, and you go by and it's a stinking fetid mess. You can smell it 5 miles away. Well, when you drive by that dirty fetid mess, that's where they're giving these animals the GMO bypass protein and the antibiotics. That's where they're perverting and adulterating the beef, the milk, and everything else. That's what, in my view, you ought to avoid. And that's what this doctor is pointing out. He says, one nasty subject must be discussed, and it seems that cows are forever getting infections around the udder that requires ointments and antibiotics. Now, an article from France tells us that when a cow receives penicillin, that penicillin appears in the milk from 4 to 7 milkings. Now, let's think about this. 4 to 7 milkings. Guy's right. It does. I know that. In fact, when we're milking cows and we give a shot of penicillin, we mark that cow down, and when she comes in, we're supposed to take her milk and keep it out of the tank. So what we do is we milk it separately and we feed it to the calves. See, if we're a dairy operation, we're probably raising 40 or 50 heifer calves as replacements. So we feed that milk to the calves. So that puts the antibiotics then into these calves, doesn't it? All right. Now, another study from the University of Nevada, Reno, tells of cells in mastic milk, milk from cows with infected udders. You know, they've got mastitis is what they've got from the BHG that we've been feeding them. It's an elaborate analysis of the cell fragments employing cell cultures, flow, cytometric analysis, and a great deal of high-tech stuff. Do you know what the conclusion was? Well, if the cow has mastitis, there is pus in the milk. Now, I'm sorry. It's in the study. All concealed with language such as macrophages containing many vacuoles and phagocytosed particles. Whatever that is. The doctor explains it. He says, macrophages containing vacuoles and phagocytosed particles, he just puts it right down to where it belongs. It's called pus, P-U-S. You want to drink that? Listen, boys and girls, that's what's in those gallons of milk on the back wall of your neighborhood supermarket. Now, of course, we're not telling you that, and we're not advertising that, and the FDA covers it up, and the USDA enacts the rules to protect the dairy industry from it. So, again, don't think that I'm opposed to this Dr. Kradjian over here. I'm a little bit opposed to some of his conclusions and some of his methodologies here, but I'm here to tell you that I was out here milking these cows. I was the guy that was sticking the penicillin up that cow's tit. I'm the one that was milking that stuff, and if you think that we hold that milk back for 7 or 8 milkings, you've got another thing coming. We'll milk that cow separately, maybe 2 or 3 times. Now, we will not put her milk in there the next milking because that's pure antibiotic. And we get tested for those antibiotics, and you can lose a tank of milk. But you can't tell. Now, they'll help us cover that up after the second or third milking. So I'd milk her on the floor twice, feed it to the cats and the calves, 2, maybe 3 milkings max, but then from then on it's going into the tank. That's just the way reality is. So let's just face up to it. And it even gets worse than that. Worse. Well, at least human mother's milk is pure. Well, sorry. A huge study showed that human breast milk in over 14,000 women had contaminated or was contaminated by pesticides. And further, it seems that the sources of the pesticides are meat and, you guessed it, dairy products. Well, why not? These pesticides are concentrated in fat, and that's what's in these products. And of interest, a subgroup of lactating vegetarian mothers had only half the levels of contamination. Now, this gives you another little clue here as to what this doctor's trying to sell here. This doctor is a vegetarian. And a lot of these guys are, and they've got an axe to grind. Now, vegetarianism, boys and girls, is a doctrine of demons. I'm going to just show you that right quickly here. Turn over here to 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy chapter 4. See if I can find it here. I'm just a plumber. I haven't been to cemetery. Let's see if I can find it. It should be right after Thessalonians here. All right, here's 1 Timothy chapter 4. Now, the Spirit speaking expressly that in the latter times, think maybe we're in the latter times here. And some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. Okay, doctrines of devils. Speaking lies and hypocrisy, that's a doctrine of devils. Having their conscience seared with a hot iron. Forbidding to marry, that's a doctrine of devils. How about them Catholic priests that forbid to marry? And commanding to abstain from meats. Hey, don't eat meat. Vegetarian. That's a doctrine of devils, which God has created to be received with thanksgiving of them which receive and know the truth. All right. Now, I just thought I'd point that out. And that comes from the New Testament, boys and girls. Don't blame Moses on that one. Going on, he says, a recent report showed an increased concentration of pesticides in the breast tissue of women with breast cancer when compared to the tissues of women with fibrocystic disease. And other articles in the standard medical literature describe problems. Just scan these titles. Cow's milk is a cause of infantile colic, breastfed infants. Lancet, 1978. And then, there's four or five different citations. I'm not going to cite them to you. You're not interested in that anyway. If you do, just go to notmilk.com and you can get the article yourself. There are many others. He's just hitting the surface. And I'm telling you here in this paragraph, there's about five or six articles in here. Cow's milk is a cause of infantile colic. And so breastfed. Now, you know, if you'd breastfeed your babies, you can eliminate that colic. But, you know, colic is a symptom of something. It's a symptom of a disease. This baby is ill at ease. It's got colic and he's crying. He's in pain. That's been my experience. Now, my wife always breastfed our babies. We never had a colicky baby. I had five of them. Then, of course, I was in the cattle business, and I knew how to raise calves, and I knew how to raise babies. There's just nothing like a calf that's sucking on the cow. And if you want to test it, just put one on the cow and take another one and put it on a bucket and take a look at them after a year, and you'll get one spindly, sickly little critter. And the same thing is true with humans. You take a human baby and you bucket feed it, and it'll turn out to be sick and scrawny. You'll have to keep taking him to the doctor constantly. All right, we're about out of time here. I'm going to have to shut it off. We'll take it up right here next time. Same time, same station. Keep in mind now that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website, georgegordon.org. And The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, there's the signal. It says my time is up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here, same time, same station, tomorrow night. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.